So, Chris,
about,
it's
I feel hard at this, Eric.
what's that?
Eric gave me a hard time about my beard.
Oh, I think it looks good.
It looks very dignified.
I look old. Sorry, you're probably saying something worthwhile, Aaron.
I'm sorry, Chris, I couldn't understand you.
Oh, I just said you're probably saying I interrupted you from saying something worthwhile.
Oh, well, go ahead and take us away, Chris.
We ready to start? Everybody here? All good?
Yep, we got a quorum.
All right, it's 6:01. I'll call the City of Ashland Tree Commission meeting to order. First up, the approval of minutes from last meeting. If you had a chance to review those, I'd like to make a motion.
Yeah, I make a motion to approve those, unless you guys want a time to reread them.
No, I second.
All right, those in favor, raise your hands.
Aye.
Passes, thank you. All right, next up, liaison report.
So Chris?
Yes.
Chris, you're coming in quite muffled. Is there anything you could do? Or is it just me?
I agree with you, Steve. He's a little muffled. I'm not sure what his microphone is.
Let me see. Am I any better? I could just.
Yeah, much better.
Yeah, okay. I just need to be closer to the mic. So next up, we've got liaison reports, and that's you, Councilman Jensen. What's happening in your world?
Well, I think since the last time we met, we've had an election. We have three new councilors, and Sean Moran, Gina Duquesne, and Paula Hyatt. We have a new mayor, Julie Akins. She will be working under, come January 1st, a new charter, which has quite a bit of significance in terms of what the mayor's role is going to be in the future. Now, it's described, I don't think we care for the term, but it's described as a weak mayor. And in the annals of city government and so on and so on, that's a recognized term. It simply means that the city council has a lot more say in running the city than we had in the old charter. The mayor's duties essentially are to run a good meeting, to appoint commissioners to the various commissions, and then there's the significant ceremonial role. But other than that, not nearly the active role in city government that we had under the former arrangement. The city council, in conjunction with the city manager, the city administrator now becomes the city manager, will have quite a bit more say in how the city is run. Some claim that that's a better, more democratic arrangement, and some claim that even with that would come a certain clunkiness in terms of efficiency and perhaps the quickness of decisions sometimes and so on. So it's kind of a mixed bag, but that's what we've got, and that's what over 60% of the people in town voted for back in May, and so we're moving forward with that. We approved a contract for Adam Hanks through September of next year to act as the pro tem city manager. We feel that it's going to be June at best before we come to a selection of a city manager, whether it be Adam or somebody else. But that process generally takes about 6 months to do, and particularly in light of COVID and the difficulties that brings financially and even administratively, that just takes longer to do things. So the highlights very quickly here. I do want to give a moment of quiet and or a moment of reflection on the tragic murder of Aiden Ellison here in our town. It's something that was shocking, and it's we'd like to think that it's not who we are, but it did happen here, and we need to rise up and do the best we can as a community to support the family and to try to set a better tone in this town, possibly down the road. It's a big, big issue. And what I say tonight here is not really going to, but I just want to honor his effect on this community. More mundane things coming down the pike. COVID is with us. It looks like it's going to be with us for a while. We're doing the best we can. City government, the wheels of city government, Aaron can certainly attest to this, are still grinding, but they don't grind quite with the ease and access that we would normally like to have for our citizenry. Fire chief. We are in dire need of a fire chief. We don't have a fire chief. We don't have a deputy fire chief. The fire marshal has stepped in to be the temporary fire chief. We had a candidate that was well on the way to being engaged, and it got derailed at the very last minute with an unfortunate set of circumstances. So we're still looking, but we're hopeful to come up with a candidate. City manager search is coming down the pike. Budget is coming down the pike. We're very happy with our new finance director, Melanie Purcell. She's given a couple of presentations at City Council, and she's very able and open. And we look forward to her having a significant impact on the finances of our town, which are impacted by COVID. The TOT tax, the motel hotel tax, the meals tax, all those things are down. But the city has done a pretty good job of pulling in some of the costs. And the report that we got here a couple of weeks ago was, well, not glowing. It wasn't dire. And so hopefully with some nimbleness and some efficiency and some goodwill, we can weather this through. We do have some work, some immediate work that's important, wildfire prep. We need to do, in light of all the things that we learned from the Alameda fire, we definitely need to do a better job. And the city is in a very robust and active, vigorous conversation right now. As far as the two important things, evacuation plans and notification, a better notification setup. And that's happening right now as we speak. An exciting thing happened the other night. We actually gave the final approval to annexing 16 acres. It doesn't happen very often in this town, as Aaron can attest to, and that's an exciting thing. Raise your hand if you don't know where the annexation is at, what took place. Anybody? Oh, good. I'm happy to tell you. Happy to tell you. It's an odd piece of property. So if you would get on the outbound 99 North, you would head north. You would pass the Maple Street signal. You would keep going. You would go under the railroad trestle. Then as you approach Anderson Auto Body, you would pull off to the side of the road. And then you would look up to your left, and up on that side hill between the railroad tracks and 99 is a 16-acre piece of property has been annexed into the city. The plans there are for it's multiple use high density apartments, affordable housing. And Aaron, can you tell me very quickly how many units are going in there? It's over 100.
Well, so they don't have site design review yet, but I believe it's meant to be somewhere between 250 and 270 when it's said and done.
Right. So we're excited about that. There was a lot of work that went into that. There was a lot of work with railroad, ODOT, county, City of Ashland, and various utilities and so on and so on. There's a significant amount of work that goes into one of those. It's a lot of people don't like to get down in the weeds on that. We do that a little bit here on the Tree Commission, but it's astounding how much work has to be done on that and how able our planning staff really is. Derek and Maria and Brandon and Aaron, and of course Bill, really do a wonderful job at dotting the I's and crossing the T's on that kind of a project. Very quickly here, community center and Pioneer Hall are high on the list of things to try to rehab in this time of COVID. It wouldn't be a bad time to do it. So there's a very active conversation about that. And I think that there is some money that might be made available for that. And in the meantime, we in the city are keeping the sewers flowing and water and electric and airport, parks, fiber network, police, fire, ambulance, streets, stormwater, trees, and the general commonwealth of our fair town. And that's the latest from Ashland, Oregon.
Awesome. Thank you, Steve. Got a lot going on.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, thanks for the update. Peter from Parks.
Just a couple of things I wanted to mention. Our forestry division is doing a fuels reduction project up at Siskiyou Mountain Park. That's the large tract up where White Rabbit Trail and those other trails go through. So that's similar to what's been done in other areas, thinning for fire safety, piling. We'll be burning and such, so that should be a good thing these days, as we know with all the fires. And Japanese Garden continues to move along. We've removed a couple dozen trees there, trees that didn't fit into the plan, mostly smaller trees, and it's still, you know, there's a lot of trees there. And we finished the tree protection fencing for the trees that remain. So we'll be keeping an eye on that and making sure that those trees stay in good shape. And it'll be a while before we really dig into the you know, remodeling and such. But after the first of the year, we should really get going on that one. And let's see, other than that, I just found out today, you probably already know this, the ice rink will not be opening at all this year. We determined with the COVID restrictions, it's just not going to be feasible. So we'll be tearing that down and opening up the parking lot as soon as possible. I know it's been kind of an inconvenience, unfortunate, but that's just the way it's been this year. So, I think that's about all I have. Thanks.
Thank you. My girls will be bummed.
No rain.
Peter, what do the green ribbons around the trees indicate in the Japanese Garden area?
Those are just all of the trees that are tagged to be saved, preserved.
Okay, so if it doesn't have a green ribbon, does that mean it's necessarily going to be removed?
All of the trees are, at this point, I believe, are removed. So some of those in the periphery are, I don't think Toru did that. I don't think he bothered to put ribbons on those. So everything you see there now is staying. And that one witch hazel plant, we still have to move that. That's going to be a project, but that's still the plan with that one. Move it down below to close to Windburn Way.
I had a question. Oh, sorry. I had one more question from a community member who was wondering about the Edwardia, which is right on Windburn Way, the one that you've kind of been trying to help straighten out.
Oh, yeah.
Is that going to stay?
Yes. Everything down there is staying. And that poor little...
Yeah. It's a great tree, though. It smells amazing when it blooms.
Flowering. Pulling that up and supporting it. So hopefully it might straighten out a bit.
I'm done. Thanks, Chris.
Yeah, sure. I was just wondering if is there public access to those plans for the design of the new garden?
Yeah, there's certainly... Yeah, it's definitely public. I And I think you can get online. That's all available. I'm not sure exactly how to get to it, but if you want to inquire, I would get online and search that. And if you can't find it, you should be able to ask somebody and they'll direct you to get to that.
Okay.
It's certainly open to the public, yes.
Cool. Okay. Aaron, anything new from the city we should know about?
Yeah, so just two items. One, here it is December, and this crossed my radar because I got an email from the city's website saying that they had a tree of the year they wanted to nominate. And it occurred to me that it's been COVID. You know, we started our first meeting, I believe, was in October. Normally, we would start nominations before that because the idea is that the nominations are happening when fall colors are setting in. When that came to my attention, I guess a week or two ago, part of me thought about trying to get a nomination form done. And frankly, I've just been really busy, so I haven't been able to action it. And the more I thought about it, with, you know, everything having lost their leaves, is it really an appropriate time of the year to be making Tree of the Year nominations? And I don't know if we want to pick up a discussion about that later. But, you know, there have been years where we didn't select a Tree of the Year, and perhaps COVID might be a reason. So perhaps we could pick that up during the discussion after we handle the cases, Chris. Okay. And the only other item is today, actually, I submitted our application for Tree City USA. I did get an email back this evening with a couple of items they wanted clarification on. Peter, I'm hoping I could touch base with you tomorrow about that. She thought the number of volunteer hours we reported was highly suspect. Yeah. So anyway, we can touch base on that. But once we clear up those items, that should complete us being Tree City USA for what I believe is the 32nd consecutive year. So hopefully that'll get wrapped up before the deadline, which is December 15th. And that's all I had.
That did come from our volunteer coordinator. So, that was the total number of volunteer hours. I don't know if that was supposed to be just with regard to trees. Maybe that
I one. Think yes, okay. Because we reported 4,879 hours, and she seemed to think that was quite high.
Okay, maybe I'll talk to him and see if he has that broken down.
That would be great, or even a corrected estimate with that in mind.
Okay.
Find a lot of trees in 4,000 hours. That's great.
Yeah.
So it would seem to be a definitional situation. So if volunteers are raking leaves up or cutting brush back to enhance the life of trees, is that considered tree work? I mean, in a way, almost all park work could be considered tree work. Perhaps maybe not picking up trash, but... I could see where there might be a definition of terms.
Yeah, and that's a real good point, Steve. The contact at the state has been really available for questions, and so I'll be sure to touch base with her tomorrow and see if that might be an issue.
Okay.
Sounds good.
All right. If nothing else, we'll go ahead and move on to the review portion of our meeting.
Yeah, and Chris, just to that point, the first item on our agenda, there are two representatives from the application that are here as attendees, and they actually do have a PowerPoint presentation when they get to speak. And so I guess why don't you do the opening script, and when it's time to bring them in, I'll go ahead and bring them up to panelists.
Okay, great. Here is our opening script. This is the time and place for the Tree Commission review portion of the land use public hearing. If you wish to speak at the hearing, please keep your comments and testimony limited in scope to issues, comments, or concerns pertaining to the landscaping and trees. The following procedure will be used at this hearing. Number one, the public hearing will be open, and those interested in stating their positions regarding the matter to be considered will be invited forward to speak. During the public hearing portion, all who wish to give testimony regarding the specific application are encouraged to do so. If you wish to speak for, against, or comment in any way, please come forward to the table at the appropriate time, give your name, address, and make your statement. Then at the beginning of the public hearing, staff will present its report on the action and conditions of approval. At this time, commissioners will have the opportunity to ask staff questions. Third, after the staff report, the applicant and applicant's representative will have 15 minutes to present the proposal. The commissioners may ask questions of the applicant or the applicant's representative without affecting the 15 minutes allocated for the applicant's presentation. Fourth, other members of the audience will be allowed to speak regarding the application and shall be limited to 5 minutes each. Those wishing to testify shall be called forward and give testimony. Fifth, the staff will then be given an opportunity to respond to any question of the commission or any matter that has been raised. And finally, the applicant will then have 5 minutes of rebuttal time, after which the public hearing portion will be closed. So I will call to order Planning Action Tree 2020-00128. This is at 45 Clinton Street. Applicant is Dolly Travers for Riverwalk HOA. This is a request for approval to remove two conifer trees from a common area at Riverwalk Subdivision. The application materials indicate that the trees are in poor health, as indicated by a lack of root flare, visible canker wounds, and a pronounced lean. The application explains that the HOA feels these trees pose a fire hazard as well. And I know this one's been on the board a couple of times. Did everybody have a chance to visit these trees? And they needing to abstain or have a conflict of interest. Okay, staff report, please, Aaron.
Yeah, so as you mentioned, this has come before you once before. The primary reason is coming back again. The previous time there wasn't a quorum, so technically it didn't come before you that first time. When staff was considering your recommendation to not approve the application, the concern was that pruning the trees to the wildfire standards, we didn't have an opinion from the tree commission about whether that amount of pruning would have a deleterious effect on the trees. So the standards in the wildfire ordinance require a horizontal clearance of 10 feet and a vertical clearance of 10 feet. So any of those branches on the western side, if they're overhanging that fence, would need to be pruned to a height of 10 feet above the fence. So 16 feet above grade, presuming the fence is a 6-foot fence. Really the main thing was that we wanted to hear your opinion on if those trees were pruned to that standard, would that affect the health of the trees in a negative fashion? And we also have the benefit of the fact that the applicants wanted to come before you and speak their piece. So that's all I have to go ahead and say for now. Should I bring them in as panelists at this time, Chris?
Sounds good. Please do.
And like I said, there's two of them. It's Dolly and Richard. And I don't know if they have a plan of how to split the 15 minutes, but I know Dolly has prepared a PowerPoint that I can share. And I'm going to ask her to ask me to advance slides. And Dolly and Richard, you are now panelists, and I'm trying to get you to unmute there. All right, Richard, it looks like your mic is unmuted. Can you say something for him, please?
Yes, I can. Thank you. Is that sufficient?
That's fine. And Dolly, are you there?
Hello, I'm here.
Okay, great. I'm not sure why their cameras are not on. Is that intentional, Dolly?
I just clicked start video. I didn't have it.
There you are, Richard. And Dolly, if you'd like to, you can share your camera as well. Okay, great. This is our first time formally having oral testimony via Zoom, so forgive any hiccups. And Chris, I'd hand it back over to you.
Okay. Welcome. And feel free to state your case. What, you have a presentation, I understand?
We do. If we could have the share screen come up, Aaron, you've got that file. So again, the request is to remove the two pine trees. And I'm Richard, she's Dolly. So I happen to be the homeowner, but I'm also the HOA vice president. So here's the situation. I've got the arrow showing where the common area north is. And the trees are the two that are right directly adjacent to the red arrow. So what we're looking at in these trees, and Dolly will give you more details, is about the nature of the trees. But I have some secondary issues because this is my home. During the high winds that occurred the day of the Almeida fire, the trees were actually a combination of brushing against and slamming against my house, which was very discomforting, needless to say. The other thing, and I took some pictures just to give you a rough idea, much to my wife's chagrin, because she doesn't like me climbing ladders, but I got up to just show that the gutters have so much debris in them that they will not even drain. I've got a quote from a couple different companies, and the quote, to get these gutters cleaned up, to get the downspouts cleaned up, and to put the minimal level of covers on is going to be $2,952. Now, hopefully that will help take care of the problem. But meanwhile, I have a serious problem with trees that are so tall that if I wanted to get them above the gutters, we'd have to trim them all the way to the top. So with that, let me turn it over to Dolly, because Dolly's the one who can make the comments about the condition of the trees. And she's much more of the expert in that area. So if you would advance to the next slide, I'll turn it over to Dolly.
Hello, everyone. We're really glad to be able to be here and present this to you. We're requesting that the two trees in this common area be removed. Both have a pronounced lean. Both have no visible root flare. Both have girdling stems. One tree has a rather severe canker on its trunk. Both trees are a present danger to the nearby home, Richards, and to our residents when they gather on the picnic, well, on the lawn, to picnic and to play games. Riverwalk was told by Katie Gimble from the Ashland Fire Department that these two trees do not represent a fire concern during a walkthrough she had with us in Riverwalk with two committees on October 29th. Therefore, we've eliminated all our fire concerns in our reasons for removal. I wanted to ask you, do you want to ask me questions as we go through or stop, or should I just go through our presentation?
We might jump in if they have a question, but I think go ahead and go through your presentation and then we'll circle back if need be.
Okay, whatever then. Okay, so the next slide, please. The first tree we're calling tree one, it's leaning forward and to the left. And the white vertical window frames that you can see of Richard's house and the red line provide some points of reference to clearly show how much the leaning is off vertical. Next. Tree one, this two shots of the trunk of this tree, it shows a significant lean and it also shows some unhealthy bark. Thank you. Next, please. Tree two is leaning to the right. The right side of the trunk is distorted if you look below. The side that it's leaning to is on the right, and this buttress at the root level is trying to counteract that lean.
Hey, sorry to interrupt, Dolly. Is it possible to see two slides back with the unhealthy bark?
Yes.
Is that picture to the left, is that the unhealthy bark, or is that just a bunch of pine needles?
I was looking to the left about midsection. Do you see that ridge of bark that below is sort of lighting up, is a little different color?
Let me add, if you're talking about the canker, there's a picture that comes later that actually shows the canker, if that's what you're referring about.
Well, also on the one on the right, up at the near the top edge where the light can see, there's an edge of Well, there's missing bark and a rather rough looking appearance. Is that visible for you?
I can see what you're describing. I think there must be a blemish in the lens or something, because it looks like there's a big brown sticky mass on the picture to the left, just to the left of the red and blue line. But it's not. We can move on. You just carry on.
We have a better picture of that. That branch with dead leaves is right in the way. So, 3-2. I think we talked about this, the asymmetrical trunk at the bottom. We have a close-up of that. This is the close-up. You can see where the buttress is. And on the left-hand side of the root, well, the trunk, it's flat. There's no root flare. The red bar is to help show you how that tree is starting its lean. It sort of curves around to the right. Next. Visible root flares are really important. They're a matter of life and death for the tree. You know that they must be planted so the root flare, the beginning of the trunk, is above ground, visible, has access to the air, not mulch. So when a tree is planted too deeply, the root flares below grade and girdling stems develop and encircle the underground portion that's buried in the trunk. So at the top picture, you see, what a healthy, small root flare. In the middle, you see a pinched trunk, no root flare, and there's an arrow pointing to the girdling roots. And these roots act as a tournament that restricts all movement of the water and nutrients. Well, not all, but can be a pretty high amount of the nutrients and water that are taken by the xylem and phloem throughout the tree. And at the bottom, you have a girdling, we have a girdling root that appears above ground, and this can happen. And trees with no visible root flares are called dead trees standing. Next. This is a normal, healthy, visible root flare. Music to our eyes. We love it when we see these. Next. Now we look for root flares in tree one. And here you may see some more bark damage on this one. But we're looking for a root flare. There is not one. Three views of the same tree. Next. On tree two, there's no visible root flare either, except the buttressing on the right-hand side, which compensates for the leaning. Next. Girdling stems, what are they? Well, when it's planted too deeply, the girdling stems develop and encircle the base of the tree beneath the soil. They can come to the surface. What they do is they act like a tourniquet. They prevent the tree from developing a root flare and from having just a normal life. They can also compress and weaken a tree at or above the root flare and cause it to actually lean and lose its stability. The appearance of a tree trunk will be affected by girdling stems, as we showed you in the last slide. When trees are planted correctly, trunks flare out. Where girdling stems prevent that, the root flare from developing, they can get narrower and they appear flattened or sunken. Next. Girdling stems. Tree one, the bottom of the trunk, I put red dots in so you could see the indented narrow horizontal girdling that's embedded within that trunk. Also, tree two is similar with girdling stems embedded in the tree and the trunk base. In both cases, these stems are killing the tree, creating a risk of falling onto the nearby home and on the lawn where the residents gather for picnics and games. Next. Here's the canker on tree one. And it appears to be that the dark areas could be caused by pathogens. Cankers this large at the base of a tree really brings up questions of structural integrity, which we already have about these two trees, but This is only on tree one. Next. Both trees have pronounced leans. Both are not stable. They have no visible root flare. They have girdling roots. Tree one also has a large canker, indicating a pathogen possibly, and also contributing to poor health. Please allow Riverwalk to continue to provide a safe environment by granting our request to remove these two compromised trees. Thank you, and do you have any questions?
Thank you, Dolly. Yeah, does anybody have any questions or need to clarify anything? Okay, if not, we'll close the public hearing portion of this planning action. Thank you both for your time and well thought out presentation.
You're welcome. Thank you very much.
Thank you and goodbye.
Bye-bye.
Chris, do you want me to go ahead and put them back to be attendees now?
Or
are you going to have questions for them? Or did you not have?
Yeah, I don't. Does anybody have questions before we do that? We may come back to it, but yeah, I think we're okay at this point. So yes, let's go ahead and close that. Okay, guys, any thoughts or additions to what we discussed maybe last time?
Well, if there was still a current concern with the fire, I think the tree would still survive with the pruning of 10 feet back from the fence there. I think, again, the fence is much a bigger of a fire issue than the wet tree. But since that's not their concern, you know, the gutters, trees drop leaves. So to me, that's not a valid reason to remove a tree. And as far as the canker, I don't think that's a pathogenic canker. I think it was a mechanical wound earlier in its life. To me, it looks like the tree was probably planted maybe a little root bound and it tipped over, and you can see that it's corrected its lean probably about 10 years ago. So that's what I see.
Tree looks fine to me. I wouldn't
want
to take it.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, if you cut down every tree that got gutters dirty and wasn't straight, and I don't agree with the assessment that it's a high-risk tree at all for failure, any of them. No offense to Dahlia, I think she obviously put a lot of work into it, but as an arborist, I don't concur with those findings at all. You know, the fire risk, I think, could be something, but again, could be pruned, and it sounds like fire-wise, it wasn't even on their radar. Yeah. Kat, did you have any thoughts?
I just had a question, I guess. It feels like they've brought it back to us a few times, and they definitely worked pretty hard to find some corroborating evidence to support what seems to just be, to me, an underlying wish to remove the trees. And I guess my question is it just okay for someone to just say, I just don't want the trees there anymore? Or I don't want to rake up the leaves or the needles, and that's my right. I don't have to prove whether it's sick or dying or a hazard or a fire hazard or whatever. Is it just a valid reason for a homeowner? And I'm not saying I disagree or agree with this. It's just a question for us. You know, to me, I feel like they just keep bringing us evidence that we're saying, yeah, well, that's not a good reason to remove a tree, which I agree with what you guys have all said. And maybe if they just said to us, we just don't want the trees there, we want to move them, I want to have sunlight on my back porch or whatever, then we'd be like, oh, okay, well, if that's what you want. But don't tell us it's because it's sick or it's going to fall on your house or it's a fire hazard. So I guess that's, I'd like more clarity about that.
Yeah, and I think, Aaron, maybe you could speak to as to why this is even before us, because it's private property, but it's kind of common property, and, you know, some of the other criteria that it could be met.
Yeah, so, you know, if the property line was drawn just a little bit different and these trees were actually on Richard's property, based on the single family zoning and the size of the property, he'd be able to cut them down without even coming to you. But because it's in a common area and the plantings were a part of the approved landscaping plan for the subdivision, that puts them into regulatorily a different category. So while it might seem a little bit arbitrary, it's sort of the nature of the beast when, and the same thing comes up with, we regulate street trees differently than we regulate trees on private property. And frankly, if it's in this sort of situation where it's part of an approved landscaping plan, if you can't make a finding that it's a hazard, there really isn't a pathway forward, because your options are, it's an emergency, which means it's an imminent danger of collapse, it's a hazard, or its removal is needed for some sort of additional development. And obviously that's not the case, because we're in a piece of common open space. And so there's really not a pathway to say, I don't want that tree for aesthetic reasons. I suppose there could be a land use process that could formally review their approved landscaping plan. And if that were to be modified, but it would still need to come back to you for your recommendation. So if, let's say they came to us and said, here's a revised landscaping plan of what we would like to do, and we want to remove these and replace it with, you know, X, Y, or Z, it would come before you for your recommendation. So that's kind of where we're at with this application.
Yeah, I agree with the points you brought up, Kat. I mean, it's, you know, we're essentially telling people what they can or cannot do on their property sometimes, and then in this case, on common property. And that's just how it is, and it's uncomfortable, but that's we're limited to being a recommended body. And
yeah, I guess I just needed clarity on whether someone could just say, I just don't want it there for aesthetic or personal reasons, you know, and if that's not the case, then I don't see any, I'm deferring to your guys' professional opinions as arborists, whether any of those concerns are valid. And the fire committee's already said it's not a fire risk. If they want to trim up a little bit to mitigate some fire risk, then I don't think that that would pose a health threat to the trees from what you've said. So, God, I feel like we just have to kick it back to them again. And they've worked really hard to try and get this one approved. But
Steve, did you have a thought?
Aaron, would there be a mechanism for a trade out that this body could rule on, that those two trees go away, but they are replaced with something else that would be more amenable to the homeowners and the HOA, but would also fit within the parameters of the original landscape plan?
So in the context of the application that's before the tree commission, they either have to make a finding that the tree is a hazard to approve it. For what you're saying, Steve, goes back to kind of the suggestion that I made, is that another alternative would be that they could begin a land use process, which would probably be a type one standard land use process, to modify their landscape plan. And if that included the removal of these trees and the replacement with different species, et cetera, that would then come before this body. But that would be in the context of a completely different question, because what's before the body is a tree removal permit on the predicated by the fact that the tree poses a hazard. So I suppose, and I'm sure Dolly and I will be having a conversation about this tomorrow, if the homeowners association wanted to pursue something like that, I would work with other planning staff to see if that was a pathway forward.
So there isn't something in the code if the tree's not a hazard, but it doesn't, it's not on a hill or a creek, or it doesn't greatly reduce canopy densities in 200 yards. Is that just referring to when you're developing the property or making room for an ADU?
Right. So under the criteria of a tree that is not a hazard, the language is a little bit odd, but basically the first criteria of it is that essentially that there's a proposed development that is underpinning the need for the removal. And so there's simply not any evidence in the record to make a finding that is the case here. So if you aren't doing development that is causing the need to remove the tree, then really your only other option is that there's a hazard. And not only that there's a hazard, but that the hazard can't be mitigated in any other manner with the exception of removing the tree.
Do they incur costs when they change their plan, as you were suggesting, as an alternative for them to go forward?
Yeah, so depending on if it were a standard type 1 land use action, not only is there a time investment, but the standard type 1 application fee is $1,092. In almost all circumstances, that would also require a pre-application first, which would be an additional $142. In contrast, a tree removal permit is $30.25.
This is a tough one. I mean, I feel like they're going to be super unhappy. And not that we're here to make people happy, but it's also, I don't know, this one feels difficult to me. I don't like removing trees for no good reason, but they're certainly, they're not walking away from it after the first go or so. So it makes me feel like they have some really strong feelings about it. But you can't approve something if it's been asked for invalid reasons. And we don't have a valid reason according to what our parameters are for removing it.
Steve? I make a motion to deny the application.
Hang on one second, Eric. Steve has a little bit more input. I'd be curious to hear.
So to answer your observation, Kat, it's very similar to the city council on land use actions that we are asked to judge on. Is we're really constrained by the code. And as much as there might be feelings in this commission relative to the landowner's needs and desires, and it seems reasonable and so on, we really have to abide by the existing code. But their approach is very reasonable, and I think they're going to understand. And maybe there's a different way to skin this cat with a conditional use permit of some sort or something. And I know that Aaron's going to put his best foot forward to try to figure out some way to skin this cat.
Okay. Thanks, Stephen.
Okay, Eric.
Yeah.
Sorry, Asa?
I made a motion that we deny the application. And the reason is because exactly what Stephen said. I mean, I think the people are legitimate. They really care about getting rid of them, but we are bound by what we're bound by, and we would be overstepping our bounds if we didn't deny the application, in my opinion.
Probably setting a poor precedent.
Yeah.
Hey, Asa, did you have something to say?
No, I was just hoping to hear what Eric said what he wanted to say.
Okay, so we have a motion on the table.
I second the motion.
We have a second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Motion carries. Okay.
And Aaron, just curious, what would happen if they just decided to cut the trees down anyway?
So then it would become a code enforcement situation. I'm fortunate in that I don't work in code enforcement, and so I'm always able to push all of those sort of questions off to Andrew. Generally speaking, code enforcement is much more about trying to get things into conformance. It's much more carrot and very less stick. So, for example, when those four trees that were cut down along East Main next to the phone building there, that was high profile. There was complaints. Code enforcement got involved. obviously at that point the trees were already cut down, and the resultant mitigation was that they were required to plant 4 new trees that I think were of a 2-inch caliber. So, you know, that obviously, you know, took some time and effort. So does that answer your question?
Yep. Yep. Thank you.
Okay. We will move on. I'll call to order planning action tree 2020-00132. This is at 2656 Street. The applicant is Quality Tree Care. The owner is Leonard Eisenberg. The request for approval to remove 2 hazard trees. The first is a 36-inch diameter catalpa, which has 3 main stems. The second tree is a 12-inch DBH blue spruce. The application materials include a report by an ISA-certified arborist, as well as a complete risk assessment forms. Application materials explain that the root system of the catalpa is damaging the nearby foundation and sewer line. Application explains that due to the shallow root system of the spruce, removal of the catalpa will expose the spruce to wind loads and may cause a tree to fall on, onto the neighboring property. All right. Did we have any need to abstain? Conflict of interest. Site visits. Up through the alley here. All right. Staff report, please.
You know, this is one of those applications where really everything that has to be that I have to say is in the blurb. It came with risk assessment forms, and it's a certified arborist who is the applicant. The one thought that I had as a layperson was that it didn't feel like there was a terribly well developed argument for the spruce tree, but I would leave that for you guys to opine on, as I'm simply a layperson, and that's all I have to add.
Yeah, I kind of thought the same thing. You know, without trespassing, we can't really expect the foundation. We just have to, go off of the arborist report on that. To me, a cracked foundation is pretty serious. If I owned a home, I would take it really seriously. And or landlord, of course. But the only thing I thought about, the argument, he says, the spruce tree next to the above catalpa tree, if catalpa tree is removed, it would expose it to winds. This tree is a shallow root system with exposed roots and root collar. It is my recommendation that this tree is removed to protect neighboring properties. My only guess is what if they grind the stump of the catalpa and then they're essentially removing half the roots of the spruce? Then I could see it being really susceptible to tipping over. But from all the documents I read through, I didn't see anything about stump grinding.
All roots are shallow.
You say all roots are shallow?
I mean, people think they have these huge tap roots, and that's not the case.
Yeah, exposed roots and root collar. Well, it's a good thing the root collar is exposed.
Yeah, as Dolly pointed out, that was a good point.
Yeah,
that's a good point. I like what you didn't do in the backyard.
How old do you reckon that catalpa is?
Yeah, is it 40? Yeah, 40, 50 tops.
It's really a nice tree, too.
Yeah, I know. I was actually more concerned about the catalpa than the spruce. The spruce looks a little scraggly to me, but... Yeah. And the catalpa has some really interesting form. It's got that lovely big side branch, but... I don't know if it's damaging the foundation, and the water line is very close to the base of it. Have they had any troubles with the water line? Because that water line is running between the tree and the house.
I think they mentioned there was an issue with the sewer line, but yeah, the map they shows the water line. Yeah. From what I saw.
do they provide any evidence that the tree is cracking the foundation? That may be common sense, but I didn't see the tree and the trunk in relation to the foundation.
Yeah, so the entire application materials are in your packet, and so I don't believe they submitted any photographs.
I don't have any.
The risk assessment form is so poorly filled out that I'm having a tough time finding it. It's not at an imminent risk of failure. I can totally see that it's probably causing foundation to the foundation and line, but I don't buy the argument that the spruce is at an increased risk because it's all of a sudden exposed. There's, I think, some validity to that, but not to the extent that it'd be an immediate hazard with the catalpa gone.
Is there any photographs of the foundation cracking or any of that? I don't see anything in here.
Not that were included with the application, no.
Did you see, anybody see cracks in the foundation on site visit?
You couldn't get back there.
I didn't feel comfortable going back there and poking around.
Well, that sure would help.
Yeah.
Oh, could we make a recommendation that they reapply with better evidence about the damage to the foundation?
Absolutely. If you don't feel there's enough evidence in the record, you can certainly recommend denial, and then they will either need to accept that denial or add additional evidence to the record. So that there's no problem with that at all.
Or could we approve it with the condition if they provide evidence of that stated?
I mean,
but
you can
have
make,
to have a look at that anyway, Acer, if they're going to provide evidence.
Unless you're delegating that to the staff advisor, right?
That's kind of what I was thinking, yeah.
I mean, that would be one option where you basically would make a condition of approval that they would need to show evidence to the staff advisor, which is how you would phrase it, photographic evidence of cracks to the foundation. And then that way, if they were to come forward and say, here's the photos of the crack foundation, that would satisfy the condition of approval. So you could do it that way if you wanted to.
I was curious, is that's a single family home, is it? Why does that need?
So to refresh ourselves on the exemptions, if you're in a single family home, and the property is not capable of further subdivision, you're exempt. If you're in a multifamily zone, and this is zoned R2, and it's occupied solely by a single family house and not capable of further development, then it's exempt. But in this case, there's actually two dwellings on the property. It is a multifamily development, and so that crosses the threshold. Any multifamily development, so once you if you're in R2 or R3 and there's more than two dwelling units on the property, you're no longer in an exempt status.
Okay, thanks.
And this one, and actually the next application too, they both sort of look like, hey, why are we looking at this? And it's because we're in a multifamily zone. In the case of the next application, it's not developed with multifamily, but because there's additional room on the lot that would enable additional development, that too requires a permit.
Okay.
Good. Thank you. Well, we had some.
I'd like to see more evidence. I'd like to actually be able to see it myself.
And my worry is if we deny it, then essentially we're just, you know, if there is a crack, it'd be nice to just kind of let it speed along for their sake. I mean,
yeah.
I want to see the crack too, but, you know, like the previous item on the agenda, you know, we tend to kind of stop things.
Yeah.
Which is where the kind of checks and balances, you know, where the recommending bodies. So, yeah, I'll go with what you guys think. I think you brought up good points. And
that sounds like a good way to go, Asa. You want to put that into a motion?
to sort of second what Eric was saying?
Yeah, really, to deny based on the evidence we're presented here tonight. All right, I make a motion to deny based on the evidence we're presented here tonight, but would be agreeable that should the applicant present solid evidence to city staff and city staff agrees with those findings that the removal of the catalpa be approved.
Well, so then the motion should be for an approval and be specific if it's for one or for both. Yeah. And then the condition of approval would be provided that they show photographic evidence of the damage to the foundation to the staff advisor.
Okay.
Well, before we make another official motion, how do we stand on the spruce? You know, like, to me as an arborist, if they're going to grind that catalpa stump, that would be pretty bad for that spruce. But if they're not going to grind it, then I see no reason to grant the removal of the spruce.
Yeah, depending on how, I mean, if they could just grind the stump itself or the catalpa, then that's probably not going to affect the spruce a whole lot, yeah? And if they don't go into the root zone.
Yeah.
It's going to be hard to remove the catalpa.
What's that?
It'd be harder to remove the catalpa or the spruce, or the catalpa rather. Or maybe why the tree guy wants the spruce out of the way. But.
Yeah.
I just think they're kind of weak arguments. But
I make a motion to approve the application for the removal of the catalpa if they submit the appropriate evidence to city staff proving the cracked foundation and recommend the denial of the spruce tree removal based on the submitted information.
I second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Motion carries. Okay, a call to order planning action. 3-2020-00133. This is 565 B Street. The applicant is Marianne Wilson. This is a request for approval to a single native plum tree that is identified as posing a hazard due to large section of decay near the base of the tree. The tree is 18-inch DBH and approximately 30 feet in height. The application materials include a report by an arborist statin about the stating maybe that the hazard cannot reasonably be mitigated through pruning and recommends removal of the tree. Am I needing to abstain from this one? The site visits? I couldn't find it. I went to the address. Did you find it, Jason?
It was on the alley.
Oh.
Yeah, it was along the alley.
Yeah, the only plum tree that I could find was, yeah, right on the alley. And
that was the one.
And then, of course, all the sides I could see were perfectly fine, but the pictures that I thought they included did show what looked like some disturbance in the cambium exposing some of the heartwood, maybe from a branch ripped out, you know, years ago. And being that it's, you know, wintertime, it's hard to really tell how the canopy health is. It was really dense, possibly because it's right below some power lines. At least I think the right below the power lines.
Yeah, it was.
So yeah, if they just keep hacking that, you know, it's just going to turn into a big ball. It was pretty big.
Yeah, 18 inches. Big plum.
It didn't seem to me like it was about to fall over, but it definitely wasn't the prettiest plum tree. Yeah,
that's a little rough. Kat and Eric, did you guys see it?
I didn't get to see this one, no.
It sure looks ugly. I mean, it really does. So.
Yeah.
And there's nothing, Aaron, did you get to see it?
I saw it briefly, but I don't have a great recollection of it when I posted the notice. So I don't really have much to add.
Okay. That's pretty messy on the side of that tree there. I mean, it's lean in this last picture. It looks like from that picture, unless they did some strange work with the camera, that looks like it's a pretty serious lean.
Yeah.
That's leaning out over the alley somewhat.
Against the
defense. Kind of, wow, looks like a lot.
Yeah, it seems like with the combination of interference with the utilities, the lean of the tree and the damage to the trunk, the combination of those things, I would be tending toward approval of this one.
Yeah, it's the only one with eyes on it. Are we missing anything? I don't see much of a problem with this one. But.
Yeah, eventually it's going to fail. Based off of the heartwood that you can see in the pictures, I would say, you know, and a lot of those alleys in the kind of the river districts have really wet soil. So I think, yeah, in a big rain and strong wind, it could go down over the, you know, the alleyway.
Okay. I make a motion to approve the application.
A second.
All those in favor? Motion carries. All right. Call to order, planning action, PAA 2020-00133. The applicant is Birchwood HOA. This is a request review and administratively approve an update to the street tree and common area landscaping plan for the Birchwood HOA. Application includes updated species that are more appropriate to the site so that the future should a tree need to be removed to either death or disease. Application does not include a request for any tree removals at this time. I have had dealings with this HOA. I've not been involved with this at all, but I'm happy to abstain if we feel that's appropriate. But, I mean, my understanding, well, maybe Aaron, you could tell us your understanding of what they're requesting here.
You know, if there was work that you were getting ready to do for them, that was with regard to this application, then absolutely you should abstain from it. But just because you've done work for them previously, what's currently before you is basically an acknowledgement of a revision to their approved landscaping plan. And as far as I know, there's nothing in this application that is going to potentially give you financial gain. And so I don't see any reason why you would need to recuse yourself. If you feel out of an abundance of caution, you should. That's certainly up to you.
Okay. Anybody else have strong feelings on that? I'm kind of with Aaron on that. But
I think you should join.
Okay. Yeah, I'm fine with that.
Okay. Well, staff report then, please.
Yeah, so we've done one of these before, and if you recall, Ashland Village Homeowners Association off of Mountain, they had problems where they had a number of street trees that came out. In that case, I believe they were the Lindenwoods. And I'm sorry?
Raywood Ash.
Raywood Ash, thank you. So similarly, they have some issues with the existing trees, feeling that the species is inappropriate. And so this is really an acknowledgement of an update to their landscaping plan for the common areas and the street trees. Everything that's on private property there isn't regulated. And they basically provided an annotated version of the original landscaping plan showing what their proposals are. And I won't go through each of them. But basically, this is going to memorialize an update to their landscaping plan so that should there be street trees that die in the future, there's not any question of what they need to be replaced with because we've acknowledged this. If they didn't go through this process and let's say they had a street tree die, we would hold them to the species that was on the original approved landscaping plan, which is the reason for doing this.
What do you guys think about the species that they're substituting for the ones that they're skipping?
I'm fine with all of us. Personally.
The main ones being Crepe Myrtle.
Yeah, they want to get rid of the liquid amber. Is that what they're saying?
Mm-hmm.
I don't like ambers at all. I mean,
and they're saying in the event that they should die, right?
That's
something else.
Yeah.
That's correct. And they would still need to come through a permitting process for that, but the answer of what it needs to be replaced with will have already been answered.
They just want some greater control over what they can plant, ultimately.
Correct. Correct.
I'm good with what they're saying here. Totally.
Is that crepe myrtle?
I believe so.
Yes, it is.
Another back me up, yeah.
Yeah.
I've developed a.
Yeah, I think I'm going to prove this. For sure.
Here, Eric. I've developed a greater appreciation for crepe myrtle lately. If you look at their flowers, they're really trippy. You know, I used to think they were just some dorky little Californian, you know, but if you look at the flower, it's like, it looks like a bunch of little flowers in this one big spike, but it's actually like only a few flowers in this one spike. It's like their petals are really skinny and then they flare out in this big thing. So it looks like a bunch of little flowers, but it's really just one little flower. You know, I mean, there's obviously like 20 flowers in a spike, but it's approximately.
Ooh, and quite then, large too.
Yeah, they can get like real big and out and just nice big canopy, and if
it's a nice late bloomer too, very late.
Yeah, one of the few things going in the fall, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'm with you, Ace. I thought it was just like a big goofy shrub from California, but yeah, no, I've been enjoying them too.
There's a really beautiful one on Hellman. Just before the corner of Orange, I believe it. Just the trunk structure, and it's just really gorgeous. So yeah, I like them too.
And Bloodgood, that's a really nice maple. It's a beautiful maple.
Yeah.
Is that a columular?
I think it's a palmatum, right? Isn't it?
Acer palmatum.
Yeah, big.
They're a Japanese maple. Yeah, like an upright Japanese maple.
And
yeah, that's a gorgeous tree.
And I mean, a liquid ambar can be huge trees. So as far as like, how adequate are they replacing canopy? I'd imagine not very well, but. But just to diversify, you know, Clay Street is a lot of cottonwoods, you know, some, you know, kind of conifer hedges.
They also have fairly small planting areas for those trees.
Yeah, so I think even just diversifying, you know, having something bright there and kind of brighten up Clay Street, I think that sounds awesome.
Yeah, and it might be 50 years before the sweet gums die, but
that's true.
But I that's a good point. They are nice and tall. But.
So we good on these? Maybe make a motion to approve the list as submitted.
Yeah.
A second from Eric. All those in favor? Okay. Motion carries. Okay, no type 2 reviews, no street tree renewal reviews. Kat, you're up. What'd you learn about wildlife best practices?
Yeah, I sent out to all of you my kind of just rough draft of what I thought might be good, and a lot of it's just kind of copy and pasted from the wildlife training people who've trained arborists. Looking over it again, I might change the word mommy bird into, I changed the language a little bit, but basically it just refers to the laws that people have to comply with some general guidelines. And, you know, not being a working arborist myself, I just kind of roughed together what I've kind of picked up from our discussions in the past. But I'd be really happy to have any input or changes suggested from you guys.
Honestly, I think that was my main observation, just what you said, just to kind of clean up the language so that it's more direct and more legalese, if anything.
Yeah. Yep.
Specifically referring to the Migratory Bird Act, which you've largely done. I wonder if there's got to be other cities that do this, that have things on the books. But,
Yeah, I guess I could contact the city of Eugene maybe and see see if they have any wording in their tree applications.
Yeah, what are you trying to accomplish here? I'm not quite getting it. I mean,
so like, Eric, I'm like, not sure if you remember last year there was a tree removal on Oak Street where there were some witnesses that were extremely upset with the way that the arborist approached the tree removal. There was a raccoon that made a leap from the tree and ended up dead, and a bunch of horrified citizens that then came to us and said, why don't you tell people how to handle these situations better? So this is our attempt as the Tree Commission to just give some input to arborists when they're approaching a tree project, or even citizens who may be removing the tree themselves, to be aware of what laws may apply to the wildlife that could be affected by the tree removal, and just general guidelines if they do have some kind of interaction with animals that are currently living in those trees.
Do you guys, as arborists, do you have any kinds of like in your study to become an arborist? Do you have anything like that in place?
To be a certified arborist, you don't have to be trained in wildlife laws that I'm aware of, but through continued education with probably several of the certification groups, you could be educated in wildlife preservation and habitat. But you're not required to have that education.
But you are required to comply to the laws that are applicable, such as the Migratory Bird Treaty Act. All of these laws are applicable whether you've been trained or not.
Yes, so a tree care professional should know that, even though you got to know about something in order to know about it in a way. But, you know, like Kat was saying, if this is provided with the, you know, condition, not the condition of approval, but if this is like, hey, by the way, we approved your tree removal permit. By the way, we're letting you know this, so you can't say you didn't know it. But that's to the applicant, not necessarily the tree care professional. Yeah. So,
and the applicant sometimes is the tree professional, of course. Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Sometimes. Yeah. I think it would be nice to figure out a way to say this. I think it's a really good point. You know, I mean, I just don't know how to say it personally, but.
Well, that's what this
idea.
Attempt was.
Yeah. Yeah, I think you did a really good job with this. You know, I don't know if in the Migratory Bird Act, if people actually look that up, would that talk about the distances, like an active nest, you're not supposed to work within, what, 30 or 50 feet, Chris, or 100 feet for a bird of prey? You know, I'm not quite sure if people would get those fine details, but you know, I think
more really specific language would be helpful, do you think, about distances?
I don't know what the specific distances are, as far as I know there are distances, and I don't know what they actually are to be able to say them right now. And we could probably make this thing, you know, like pages upon pages upon pages of the fine details. And I don't think we want to do that because it's just going to be like tree removal proof. Here you go. And
it wants to be one page.
Yeah, this length that you have is really nice. What I really like is that if you encounter wildlife and need guidance, call ODF and W. I think that's awesome. Also, wildlife images, I think that's crucial, and that's awesome.
This is one of those kind of obscure laws. I've been working as an arborist for a number of years, and it wasn't until I took learned how to create wildlife habitat stems with Brian French that he told us about this. Every arborist in the room, nobody heard of this. And it's a very real thing. And tree companies have been sued and heavy fines. I think just people being aware of it, we'll have a number of clients who are working in a tree and there's a nesting bird right in the prime habitat time. And like, I'm sorry, we have to come back, you know, after November, basically in the winter after the birds have migrated. But I think just making people aware of this, that it's a thing, could go a long way. It's interesting with the raccoon, you know, doing this a number of years, and I've come across one raccoon, and I think I've shared the story, and we just waited, and it left. It's fairly rare, but I do think, people should be aware that there are options and that it's not acceptable to continue cut down a tree with a live animal in it, whether it's a migratory bird or not. I think maybe pulling specific language, laying out the Migratory Bird Act, and then offering some general guidelines. The pre-work surveys, I doubt would happen. I think it's a good guideline. Realistically, in my world, it probably wouldn't happen. We're all required and should be inspecting a tree before we ever set foot in it or start working on it. That might be something to draw out more.
The guidelines were the ones I wanted the most input from you, you know, kind of like boots on the ground. What is realistic to expect from an arborist? I made that note about metal flashing around the tree just because I remember an arborist previously saying that that's what they do if they are trying to discourage a raccoon from returning to before they remove the tree. So,
yeah.
Any of you reply to the email that I sent out with just specific suggestions about those guidelines, that would be helpful. And then I can, I'll do more research on the Migratory Bird Treaty Act and get more specific information about distances if it's available. And I can send a second draft back to you for the next meeting.
And
I want to look into this too. Yeah.
Perhaps
I'll look into this too. This is good.
What?
Really good.
Hey, sir.
Perhaps, you know, the distances, now that I'm understanding your layout a little better now, I think it's pretty simple. Those distances will be in those laws, I'd imagine, you know, so if people can find those on their own. You know, I think keeping it simple is good. You know, the only part about the guidelines that just kind of rung a little weird to me was the best time to conduct a pre-work survey is early morning or late afternoon. And I remember that being in some of the details that you got from the woman that you had contacted. And that maybe is for some species, but probably not for everything. And it just, I just don't know if we need to be recommending when, I don't know. Mm-hmm. That was just the only part that kind of felt a little weird to me. But at the same time, I would be completely fine if what you've gathered here is what people receive. It can always be changed in the future because this isn't like some law. This is like, hey, by the way, here you go.
Yeah.
And you know, whatever gets first released, there's always going to be a little critiquing or a little like questions like, hey, well, what about this? You know, and that, and maybe, you know, other people can sort of steer it in the direction it needs to go. So I'm totally stoked with all the work you've done and what you've created here.
I can reach out to Brian French, who is a fellow, he's a working arborist in Portland and puts on workshops. So I'm very passionate about this. So he might have some good resources too and some wheels we don't have to reinvent. He may have some language laid out already, or maybe Portland uses it. I don't know, but I can drop him a line.
Oh, that'd be great. Thanks, Chris.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Well, I'll wait to hear from you, Chris, and then I'll do a second draft and send it back for everyone to look over again, and maybe we can get it approved by the next meeting.
Cool. Yeah. No, thanks for following through with that, Kat.
Yeah, this seems like a really good start. Thank you.
Yeah, I agree. Thank you.
I got your email, and sorry I didn't respond.
No, it's totally fine. It's sometimes a discussion is better.
I read it. I just didn't respond either. I thought it responded.
I didn't notice. Eric responded.
Oh, I love this kind of stuff. We have squirrels all over our place and our feeders and stuff. And I mean, I just watch those things and it'd break my heart. Like, we can't even watch them cross the street.
I know, it's hard, isn't it?
It's like that. I mean, little animals are so cool, so beautiful.
Yeah, on YouTube, you can watch people set up whole obstacle courses for the squirrels to get their food, and they make it more and more difficult, and the squirrels always master it eventually.
There was a really cool thing on the news the other night. There was a lady who's a chef. Oh, no, she's a food critic. That's right. And she set up these tiny little, restaurant settings for a chipmunk. And she would do these photo shoots with a chipmunk that would come and sit it with this amazing sushi or this little bowl of spaghetti with meatballs, tiny miniature stuff. It was very cool. That's how we keep ourselves entertained during a pandemic, apparently.
And again, on the note of responding or contributing, I'm still aware that I need to do a write-up on the giant sequoia in Bellevue as far as the four trees that we had all agreed. I think Kat had responded, did her part. I haven't done my part, but I remember that I still need to.
Do we want to spend just a minute touching back on Tree of the Year and
take your guys'
temperature? You know, I feel... like I said earlier, that maybe we've let that ship sail. It's a little late in the year. What is everyone's thoughts?
Can we start taking nominations as they come in without much publicity, and maybe around springtime start pushing it a little more? And
so my other commission right now is actually getting ready to work on a project that's been taking substantial resources of mine. If we're going to go ahead and do nominations, I would suggest that maybe we wait until, you know, right before spring starts blossoming. That gives me a little time to prepare for it. And the other thing is that, as some of you may recall, there's always been this weird tension between the nominations and the voting, and then the Tree of the Year for 2020 is being given in 2021. And so we might as well embrace this as an opportunity to get that all on the right page, where nominations, voting, and the award all happens in the same calendar year. So maybe it's a blessing in disguise, and we plan to get nominations rolling in the springtime and voting in the summerish time. I mean, the downside to that, the reason we've always done it the other way was, as I understood it, the explanation was the nominations were when the fall color was in, and then we're giving the award tied in with Arbor Day. And tying it in with Arbor Day is great. And there's nothing saying that we can't do something in conjunction with Arbor Day where we acknowledge the previous year's Tree of the Year. But this might make a lot more sense, having nominations in spring, voting in summer. Maybe there's some appropriate time in the summer, or we'll give the award in fall. I mean, there's really no regulations that we have to follow. This is whimsical, right? So as long as the collective is on board, we can you know, choose to do that. So what do y'all think about that idea?
I like it.
Yeah,
I think it's a great idea. All around Arbor Day, just the more awareness, the better. We could acknowledge the old one and say, hey, give us your nomination for this year.
Exactly. So maybe Arbor Day becomes more of an opportunity to gin up the nominations rather than giving the award, right?
Yeah.
So then the idea is to give the award in the fall, because some trees, they're at their prime in the spring.
Sure. You know, again, this is kind of ours to deal with. I think using Arbor Day as an opportunity to really get word out there for nominations is a great idea. And perhaps we can all put our thinking caps on and come up with an idea of when a good time to award it would be. This is really something that we have full control over.
Can I just get clarity, Aaron? Are you suggesting that then there wouldn't be a Tree of the Year for 2020? We're skipping that? Is that what you're saying?
As would be totally appropriate, don't you think?
Well, another little ask.
No! 2020 has been horrible enough. Canceled. We can't also not have a Tree of the Year.
So, Kat, what we can
trees
do...
Trees are what got me through this pandemic.
So, Kat, what we can do is we can get a photo of... Did you see the photo of the Rockefeller Christmas tree when it was first delivered?
Yeah, I did. And it's such a shame because it's a beautiful tree now.
I think that should be the Tree of the Year 2020.
No! 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 I have, I'm serious. There are so many people out there walking around relying on trees for their very sanity right now. I feel like I don't want to skip 2020. I just symbolically, they have gotten me through this bloody pandemic so far. And I think trees can be beautiful all time. In fact, oak trees to me are more beautiful in the winter than in the summer when you can see the amazing structure of their branches. And so, I don't know. I mean, I hate to be the sticky wicket, but I don't want to skip 2020. I feel like the trees need some recognition.
Okay. I can get a nomination form put together. Last year that was primarily distributed by people coming to the front counter at the Winburn Way building, and I would, make sure someone took one.
We can send out links to our friends too to get voting going. And
okay,
I've already got a tree that I have in mind that I want to nominate too.
Okay, so that sounds like that's one vote for doing a 2020 Tree of the Year. I can't
that's
guarantee you I can get it the nomination form done until mid-month at the earliest. So,
even January's fine. It needs to be called the Tree of 2020.
Okay.
I don't want to put pressure on you, Aaron, but I just don't want to skip 2020. That's okay. My two cents. But if I'm outvoted, that's totally fine.
Is there something we could do to help you with that, Aaron?
Not really. I mean, it won't take me too long to make the form. I'll make it someone else's job to get it on the website. I'm not sure how many nominations we'll get, but it sounds like Kat feels strongly that we should go through with it. And so do we want to take a vote or just go ahead and say we're doing it? Or?
But didn't we already collect nominations this year?
Yeah, I'm confused. Where did the process stop?
Okay, yeah. So to bring everyone back up to speed, when COVID happened, the voting was underway. And there was a date where there was a voting deadline. I don't recall what it was off the top of my head. And the winner was the oak tree at the top of Church Street. So that was the 2019 Tree of the Year.
I see. So we'd be taking nominations now and voting in the spring for the 2020 tree.
Correct.
Does this put you in a place where, you can just, all you've got to do is create the nominating form and then let it lie until the spring when we start to wade through all of that, when you've got more time, when you're...
Yeah, I mean, so basically the only work I would need to do in the near term would be to get that form generated and get it pushed onto the city's website. So that's not a whole lot of work. Before voting starts, there's... a half a day's work driving around, taking photos, et cetera, et cetera. But that's then. So,
and maybe we can help by, if any of us submit a tree, we can submit photos with it. Would that help if we email you photos?
Very much so. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Okay.
Maybe we can ask people to do that when they submit a tree. Do it via email.
Yeah. Ask people to take photos and submit it with their nomination.
So, in the past, it's been hard enough to get people to turn in the form. Obviously, if people want to do it via email, I don't even recall how many nominees we had last year. I feel like it was less than 20. Yeah. So
there's quite a few.
Okay. Well, I will work on getting that published prior to the next meeting.
Thanks, Aaron. I'm sorry to be a pain about it.
No, no, it's all right.
Make her change the mommy thing. I'll leave it out.
But if I'm hearing right, like we have been presenting the winner at Arbor Day. Now
correct.
We're kind of thinking about trying to rally up people's stoke about Arbor Day, and then being like, yeah, it's Arbor Day, you know, you got a cool tree, you know, and then people submit their nominations, and then we present it like, you know, summer solstice or like Valentine's Day or something.
Earth Day, would... maybe.
What's that?
Oh, is Earth Day before or after Arbor Day?
I think it's before.
Oh, okay, so that's not helpful. Well, maybe we can gin up excitement on Earth Day and then present it at Arbor Day. I don't know.
Well, May. That's. I think that's just like 1 month, though. Or.
Well, we have the whole winter to kind of also, you know, for us to spread the word amongst our friends and maybe sharing on social media. There's also a city newsletter that goes out once a month, right?
That's right.
That could announce it.
And whatever happens is, you know, I think the simpler it is, the more people will understand it and then maybe be able to do more with it. Like, oh, it's so simple. All I got to do is nominate a tree, you know?
Yeah. And with the city building closed, wouldn't it be better that the form is just like more like a link? Hey, if you want to nominate a tree, send a photo and a description to this email address.
Yeah, I'll redo the form so it's really more of a flyer rather than a form, and that way we can make submissions come in via email. So that's a really good suggestion, Kat. Yeah.
And then you can just, if they don't give you a photo, just reply back saying, we need a photo or we can't consider it. I mean,
you know
I
what?
Don't
that's,
know.
That's a really good idea. I'll make that flyer to that effect, and that will definitely reduce the workload. So really good suggestion, Kat.
Okay.
And just give it to Nicole. Let her do it.
I didn't hear it, you, Eric.
Breaking up a bit.
Let Dorinda Cottle do all the work.
I don't know who you're referring to.
She's a lady in parks, I think, that does a lot of work with the email.
Well, I can't delegate work to someone in the parks department.
Oh. Okay. Are we good? I need to have my dinner.
I'm getting hungry too. What's
hey, Aaron, before you go, I will get you
about
the volunteer thing tomorrow. So, yeah.
That'd be great. Thank you very much, Peter. I appreciate it.
Sure.
Okay.
Touch on election of officers. It keeps popping up on the agenda.
Yeah, you know, I probably should just remove it. We've discussed it a number of times, and it really doesn't make sense to even try to do it until we have more commissioners, and you seem to be willing to continue to do the duties, and I don't hear anyone else protesting. So,
I'm happy.
Yeah, thanks, Chris, for taking that spot.
I have someone I'm working on right now as a potential commissioner, so we'll see.
All right, then. Nice meeting. Thank you, guys. Okay.
All right. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Have a great week.